I think there's a real connection between the beauty of West Cork, where Francis Humphreys lives, and his programming of the West Cork Chamber Music Festival. I can't think of anything more beautiful than listening to glorious chamber music live in Bantry House and coming out onto the steps during the interval on a sunny June evening and watching the sun set on Bantry Bay. I visited Francis on his farm some miles outside Bantry to see exactly what does inspire the programming for his festival, which is right up there with the great chamber music festivals of Europe. I remember hearing about a dairy farmer in West Cork who was playing Mozart to his cows. And I remember hearing also that the yield improved as he did. It was you, I presume. And is it true?
It's certainly true, though. It was more likely to be Bach than Mozart. For some reason, the Baroque suited them better.
The yield improved?
And as long as the trick with cows is for everyone to be happy, for the cows to be happy and for the milker to be happy and everything to run smoothly. So if the music makes things run smoothly, then the milk goes up, yes.
And in the early days of you being a farmer here, when you were playing Bach to your cows, how did it develop that you moved from full-time farming little by little? Was it more and more all the time into the festival?
It happened quite quickly. Of course, the first couple of festivals were done almost entirely on a voluntary basis. And then some good people said to me, Francis, you can't go on, you know, this won't work unless you put together an organisation and that you get paid to do it. And that's at the point, I think there was one year where we sold the dairy herd and I lived off that money for a year, and it was a huge gamble. If the festival didn't work and if we didn't come to some form of salary out of it, then disaster.
Because presumably your voluntary effort grew and grew and it took away more time from the farm.
Yes.
And you had to make a decision to go one way or the other.
Get insight into that, talk to my family.
Do they all think it has been worth it?
I have to pass on that one.
In the programme for this year's festival, you have a line that I love. The 65 events of our 18th festival bring together over 100 musicians in our annual attempt to stop the clock and convince ourselves that music is the only reality and the rest of the world merely shadows.
Yes. I mean, that's what the festival's about, is giving us a chance to, yes, step off the world and listen to wonderful musicians playing wonderful music non-stop, all day long.
And it is indeed music round the clock. The day starts in Bantry with a morning talk at 10 a.m. There's a chance to meet the musicians there in the Brick Oven restaurant in the town square. Then it's across the square to St Brendan's Church for the 11 o'clock coffee concert. The little school beside the church hosts the lunchtime student concert. Then at 4 o'clock it's time for the Stars in the Afternoon concert, either in the church or in beautiful Bantry House, which must have the most spectacular views of any stately home in the world. Then the many wax candles of the chandelier in the library are lit as the darkness falls for the late night concert. But where did it all start for Festival Director Francis Humphreys?
Yeah, well, I'm passionate about the music, and years and years ago, like nearly 20 years ago now, we thought how nice it would be to have the musicians come to us instead of traipsing up to Cork and Dublin and London and Paris and New York or whatever for our concerts. Have the musicians come here. So that's what we've done.
It's a bit difficult too when you're a dairy farmer to get away from your farm to go to visit chamber music festivals of the world, I presume.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, the dairy farmer part of my life has gone now, I'm afraid, but
is it the intimacy of chamber music that you're drawn to?
Yes, I think, I mean, my feeling has always been that the symphonies and the operas and the concertos were the composer's public persona and the chamber music was their private persona. I mean, that's a kind of cliché as regards the Beethoven quartets, but I think it works right the way through. So that the small and the intimate is the composer's intimate thoughts, yes. You know, when one's a student, if one hasn't been listening to music all your life, I think the operas and the symphonies and the concertos, you know, they're amazing and impressive. And I used to listen to Mahler and Wagner and things like that. But no, Beethoven Quartet would do the trick as well.
Yeah. And what about contemporary music? You obviously listen to a lot of contemporary music. It's one of the features of the festival, isn't it? The way you program unknown music against favourites.
Yeah. I mean, there's two things there. There are the composers from the 19th and 18th and 17th century that are lesser known. I mean, for instance, we're doing some songs this year by Barbara Strozzi, who's a Venetian composer, lady composer from 17th century, and they're absolutely extraordinary songs.
Where did you discover those?
Sometimes you read a review, sometimes you go to a festival and you hear it. I don't think the Strozzi came from that. One of the Brock people must have said to me, you must listen to Barbara Strozzi. Yeah. So off I went.
And is that sort of like having another little jewel in your treasure chest? Do you sort of collect these charms?
Yes. I mean, she's amazing, and we'll probably do more after this year. And then at the other end of the scale, there's the contemporary music that frightens a lot of people and frightened me for a long time. But I think the secret with contemporary music is to hear it live. I think it makes so much more of an impression live than it does.
What do you put that down to? Is it the energy?
Yes, it's the energy. It's actually seeing physically what the players have to create in order to play that music. It's not straightforward. I mean, for instance, we're doing the second book of the Ligeti Etudes this year, and that's seriously difficult music. And it's blindingly obvious how difficult it is when you see someone playing it.
There's a whole set of relationships there, aren't there? The relationship between the composer, especially if it's a contemporary living composer, and the musicians, and then the relationship between the musicians and the audience.
Yeah.
And it's very strong here in Bantry, isn't it?
Yes, well, we have a wonderful audience, and all the musicians comment on that, how focused and concentrated the audience is. And I mean, if you look around, there are a lot of musicians in the audience, and people have really come to listen to the music. I mean, that's the thing about where we are a long way away from anywhere, and chamber music requires concentrated listening to benefit from it. So the people who come are people who've made a huge effort to come and get an awful lot out of it, and the musicians sense that straight away.
And also the audience gets a chance to mingle with the musicians and chat to them. It's quite
a particular feature of the festival is to bring the musicians in for as much of the 9 days as possible.
So, for example, on tonight's concert, there could be up to 15, 16 musicians involved.
Yes, absolutely.
Of world-class quality.
Yeah, you could have two or three string quartets and soloists. And in the more extravagant concerts with two intervals, with six works, you could have six different groups of players.
Do you put the programme, do you write the music or the lyrics first? Do you put think the programme first and then get the musicians?
I think there are two things happen. Is first of all, you start off by coming up with ideas of works you particularly want to feature. And sometimes it's a matter of finding the right performer for those works. But you can't, a lot of performers have a certain number of works that they are playing that season, and it can be quite difficult to get them to take on anything else. So sometimes but if you ask them like a couple of years in advance and say, listen, I'd like you to come and take part in Brahms Sextet in 2 years' time, and twist their arm.
And work it into their schedule.
And work it into their schedule, yeah, from a long way out. So that's part of the secret, is getting the musicians for the piece.
It's quite complex.
It's very complex. And then, of course, some musicians, you invite a quartet and say, well, we're playing that this year, and then you try and fit that in for them. Or you have a quartet like the Darnell who specialise in unusual, well, less obvious composers, people like Feinberg and Sagan that were playing this year. And it's wonderful music that nobody knows. So it's great to give it an airing. And I think that's critical. I think that's what festivals should be doing, is letting the audience get to hear music that they wouldn't normally hear.
There was that marvellous year that you featured composers who had been in Theresienstadt in the concentration camp and the extraordinary music that came out of that time. And yeah. A lot of people would have heard it here in Bantry for the first time.
Yes, yes. I mean, there was a whole... The Nazis did a very efficient job of forbidding those composers because they couldn't get their music published even. So it's taken decades, half a century in some cases, for the music to be discovered. I think the big discoverer was Gidon Kremer at Lockenhaus. I think he did a lot of work finding that music, and then the Lockenhaus used to record. They used to record the festival and publish the CDs.
And is it and through through the Austrian festival, the Lockenhaus festival, that you discovered that music?
Well, I think that's where I came across, for instance, Schulhoff. And then you read the story, and then you find out more about who was involved, and then you go looking for the rest of the music.
And have you actually brought that music to the attention of musicians, or would you try and go after the same musicians who have performed that
at,
say, the Lockenhaus Festival?
A bit of both, yeah. No, I mean, there's a lot of that in musicians learning pieces for the first time here to play in the festival.
And a lot of the musicians would be playing with musicians they haven't played with before.
Yeah,
you'd
yeah,
have a solo pianist who normally does solo repertoire might end up in a piano trio or...
Yeah.
So they rehearse an awful lot here during the festival.
Yes, I mean, the rehearsal schedule is a work of art and...
Of a logistical mind, military precision.
Absolutely. I mean, it's extraordinary how difficult it is actually to put that together. You've just got, and you have to actually be thinking of the rehearsal schedule when you're programming.
Whether it's possible to
whether
do it logistically.
Whether it's actually possible to fit it in. And then everything gets screwed up because the musician says, I can't, I have to come a day later or something. And then everything sort of collapses and you have to start again.
Back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
So how many musicians altogether?
Well, I think there's about, I think there's 60 or 70 soloists, and then there are students, and then there's the Irish Chamber Orchestra, and there's the Baroque group. So it's, I think it's 110 altogether, something like that.
It's a lot of bodies to move
bodies,
around for
yes,
rehearsal.
Yes.
Collecting from Cork Airport.
Yes, that's another schedule, yes. Getting them here. And then the planes... are late, the flights are late, or the music is in the luggage which has gone to Rio de Janeiro, and so on and so forth. But we usually get by.
I'm imagining you just thinking of the music, but actually there's an enormous logistical...
Yes, to be fair, I have a wonderful team here in West Cork Music who handle most of the logistics. So as long as I get it right first day, you know, of making it actually physically possible to produce, then it's done. I don't have to worry. During the week, on the whole, I don't worry an awful lot about...
Because you've worried all the rest of the year.
I've done all the other worrying.
Francis Humphrey's programming for the West Cork Chamber Music Festival has over the years reflected his own fascination for the socio-political situations in which composers and artists live and create their work.
Yes, I mean, it seems like there's nothing like a really repressive regime to bring out... I mean, you think of poets like Akhmatova, composers like Shostakovich, you know, that music came out of very, very, very hard times. But, of course, there were a lot of other people who never made it. I mean, if you think of the composers that the Nazis destroyed. I think it's important to realise where the music came from. And I think... It's also important going back in time, looking at what was going on at the same time, so that Schubert was writing at the same time as Beethoven, and early Brahms crossed over with Schumann, you know, to get to see what was happening at the same time and what was happening in Europe, you know, whether the wars going on or, I mean, Beethoven there with, you know, the Napoleonic Wars and so on.
We've had a lot of wonderful music out of the Soviet composers,
yes,
haven't we?
Yes.
Not least of which was when the Shostakovich string quartet cycle was played in its entirety outside of the festival.
Outside of the festival, yes, yes. Yeah, we were lucky enough to persuade the Borodins to come here with wonderful cellist Valia Bolinsky.
And the Borodin quartet played the entire
And then they came to the festival, and then they came back 2 years later to do the complete cycle at Easter 1 year.
They performed that cycle basically in the major cultural capitals of the world and Bantry.
Yes.
How did you get that to happen?
Yes, I don't know. They wanted to come. I think musicians like coming to Bantry. We look after them well. It's a lovely place, dedicated audience. They come, they enjoy being here, they want to come back. Though I must admit, I was astonished when they agreed to come.
I suspect from your programming over the years that you're actually drawn to the spiritual side of music as well. You've brought us a lot of beautiful music like Sophia Gubaidulina and Arvo Pärt, Goretzky, John Taverner, who was here himself. Gubaidulina, for example, said at one stage, "I can't think of any way to explain the existence of art other than as a means to express something greater than ourselves." Is that what it's about for you? Or
I think so, yes. I mean, if Beethoven's late quartets are transcendent music, and not in, you know, the way that some people like Pärt or Taverner are transcendent. It's different. It's more intellectual, isn't it? I mean, different composers you react to in different ways. I mean, Mozart and Beethoven. Mozart is more joyful, I think, whereas Beethoven is serious, but there's a huge depth to it. But then there's a huge depth to Mozart as well, but it's you reach it in a different way. And I think I'm looking for that from all the music I listen to. Some of it, I mean, some music is just so self-indulgently beautiful. It's just wonderful to sit there and soak it up. Take a Brahms sextet that we're hearing this year. I mean, it is self-indulgent, but it's wonderful.
And wonderfully romantic.
Wonderfully romantic, yeah. This year we hear, I've never heard it live before, Arvo Pärt's Tabula Rasa, which was kind of the start of that whole minimalist, sacred minimalist movement. It'll be fascinating to hear it actually live.
Can a festival sometimes grow too big? Can it get too far away from its original intention?
I don't know. I mean, I've very much based this festival on the festival at Kuhmo in Finland, the north of Finland, which is actually runs for 2 weeks and is even more intense, I think, than we are. And they have three venues, the smallest of which holds 500.
They also have fantastic funding supports in Finland as well.
Yes, but they fill all their venues. I mean, one venue is over 1,000. It's used for coffee concerts and it's packed. It's incredible, absolutely incredible. It seems like half Helsinki
travels
decamps they all decamp to the forests, to the lakes and the saunas. And they go and listen to music and spend the night in the saunas. I don't think they sleep at all because, of course, sun doesn't go down. And swim in the lakes and come out and go listen to some more music and go back to the sauna again. I mean, it's extraordinary.
But there are fantastic musicians coming out of Finland at the moment as well, aren't they?
Yes, yes. I mean, that seems to me the results of inspired political decisions maybe 40, 50 years ago to focus on music education. I mean, it is extraordinary what's been achieved there. And the infrastructure for music is there. Kuhmo built, that festival started in the early 80s or late 70s. After 23 years, they built this incredible venue.
So you're 18 years on the go now.
So we've
five years to build a venue.
To build our concert hall, yes. There's a whole other story there about keeping a festival going in these days is more about finding the money and the grants from wherever.
Do you feel that now you really know how to do it, but now it's really challenging to find the funding to do it?
Yes, hugely challenging. I mean, we've been very lucky with European funding for these 3 years, but the future is tricky.
But do you think when you sit down at the festival now, will it all feel like it's worth it?
Yes, you sit down and you listen to the music and you think, that's why I did it. It's wonderful. That's the payoff for me.